I had just finished a long day of work and decided to order food from my favorite sushi place. I was still adjusting to life without Brock, my fiancé, who passed away under mysterious circumstances 6 months ago. He was stuck deep into ritualistic practices ever since he lost his mom and seeked a way to contact her spirit. His absence left a void in my life that nothing could fill. When the delivery guy arrived that night, he held onto the bag for a moment longer than usual, staring at me with an unsettling intensity. His eyes were dark and piercing, and his demeanor made my skin crawl. He handed me the bag and left without a word. As I closed the door, a note fell out from the bag. It read, "Brock is alive." My heart raced. Could it be true? I rushed outside, but the delivery guy had vanished into the night. I felt a mixture of hope and dread. I had to find out more. Over the next 13 days, I ordered the same meal from the same restaurant, hoping to see that delivery guy again. Each night, a different person showed up at my door, and each night I was left disappointed. On the 13th day, he finally arrived.
"What did you mean when you said Brock is alive?"
The delivery guy looked puzzled.
"I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. This is my first time delivering to you."
"Is this a joke?"
"Ma'am, I'm just here to deliver your food."
"How do you know Brock?"
"I don't know any Brock. Look, miss, I'm not looking for any trouble. The food is $12.50.
I felt a wave of confusion. Was he lying? He left, and I opened the food parcel to find another note. "Brock can hear us. Please meet me under the bridge on Mount Boulevard tomorrow evening at 6. The next evening, I stood under the bridge, feeling the cold wind whip through my hair. I waited for an hour, but no one came. Disheartened, I returned home. But to my shock, my apartment looked like it had been hit by a hurricane. The wall art was gone, the TV missing, litter everywhere, and my bedroom drawers were ransacked. I was in a state of panic, and that is when I put two and two together. The delivery guy was a scamster. He probably looked up that I had lost my fiancé and planned the whole thing to get me out of the house and ransack it. I called 911, my hands trembling as I dialed. Two cops arrived quickly. They sat with me, calmed me down, and started talking the details. They called another unit with the information who arrived and brought a news that shook us all. They found a van in the parking lot of my building containing all my stolen items. The thief hadn't left with the loot.
"Damn, we might still have the thief inside. Did you check all the rooms?"
"No, I was too distraught. I never looked into the guest bedroom."
The police barged into the guest room. I heard a gasp from one of the officers while the other rushed out urgently and started speaking something on his radio. I peeked in and saw the thief lying dead on the floor, covered in blood and surrounded by shards of glass.
"What happened here?"
I was horrified. The police looked at me with suspicion, but then they noticed the mirror in the corner. Written in blood were the words, "It was Brock." I was in shock. Was his spirit somehow involved in all this? That night, I fell into a restless sleep at my sister's house since my place was sealed. My mind swirling with fear and confusion, all the pain which I had finally started to avoid, surfacing. But in my dream, I saw Brock. He looked just like he did before he died, handsome, with a gentle smile that always made me feel safe. He reached out to me, but before I could touch him, he vanished. When I woke up, I felt a strange sense of peace, as if Brock had given me a message. I got out of the bed and went to the bathroom, where I saw a faint reflection of Brock in the mirror, smiling at me. Tears streamed down my face as I whispered to his reflection,
"I miss you so much, Brock."
His reflection slowly faded, but the warmth in my heart remained. I knew that Brock was somehow still with me, protecting me. I didn't understand the supernatural events that had unfolded, but I felt a deep connection to Brock's spirit. I've been the manager of Harrow Apartments for over a decade. The building, with its tarnished reputation, is known among delivery drivers as a place where strange things often happen in the elevator. Some call it haunted, others say it's cursed. Whatever it is, it's my job to keep things running smoothly. Or at least as smoothly as they can in a place like this.
The rumors started years ago, but the incidents that cemented Harrow's infamy was hard to dismiss. The first one was the most shocking. A young delivery guy, maybe in his early 20s, entered the elevator with a bag of food. The CCTV footage showed him looking around nervously as soon as the doors closed. He seemed to hear something. Then his eyes widened in horror. Without warning, he burst into flames. Spontaneous combustion, they call it. One moment he was there, the next gone in a blaze. How does someone just burst into flames? The second incident wasn't any easier to explain. Another delivery person, an older man this time, entered the elevator. The footage showed him clutching his chest as soon as the door shut. He stumbled, gasping for air, and collapsed. A stroke, the doctor said, but the timing was uncanny. Then there was a third, a woman delivering groceries. She entered the elevator, and as soon as the doors closed, she started screaming, her eyes fixed on something invisible in the corner. She banged on the doors, begging to be let out, then fell to the floor, dead from a heart attack. These incidents never happened to residents, only to delivery people. And not every delivery person, just some. And then came Bruce. Bruce was young and carefree, an extrovert. He'd give me a high five whenever he'd be delivering to one of the residents. We had spoken about the infamy of the elevators before, but Bruce was one of those who didn't believe in the stories. Young and brash, he dismissed the warnings as superstitions. It's just an old building. Nothing's gonna happen to me. Unless the elevator wires snap. Then you'd go to jail, buddy. That day, he entered the elevator with a bag of takeout. I wasn't at the reception, but saw these later through the CCTV recordings. He pressed the button for the 10th floor, but the elevator stopped after a few seconds of going up. Confused, he pressed more buttons rapidly, but nothing happened. The CCTV footage showed him standing there, perplexed, when he suddenly went limp but remained standing, kinda like sleeping while being up. What I saw next, I don't believe in all the spirits and shit, but I saw him suddenly levitate in the air for a few seconds before collapsing. Bruce woke up and frantically pressed the buttons again. His eyes widened in terror as he turned towards a corner of the elevator. He started screaming and banging on the doors, his face twisted in fear. And then, for a fraction of a second, the footage showed a shadowy, almost invisible figure in the corner. Bruce saw it too and froze. Then the camera glitched, and the screen went black. When the footage resumed, Bruce was gone. He had entered the elevator, but never left it. He vanished without a trace. What is happening in that elevator? Oh, the legend goes back to the building's construction during the Great Depression. Work halted at the 21st floor when funds dried up. The construction workers, suddenly jobless, faced hunger and despair. One worker, in his desperation, jumped from the 21st floor into the elevator shaft. His body was never found, and when the construction resumed 2 years later, no one bothered to check for a body at the bottom of the rubble in the shaft. I've come to believe that the workers' spirits haunt the elevator. Maybe it's revenge, or maybe it's something more sinister. The spirit seems to target only those who are carrying food, perhaps a cruel reminder of his own hunger and despair. I've tried to get the elevator inspected, but every time the technicians come, they find nothing wrong. It's as if whatever haunts the elevator knows when it's being watched. The residents have their theories. Some say the worker's spirit is trapped, reliving his last moments over and over. Others think it's a curse that anyone who enters the elevator with food is doomed. I don't know what to believe, but I do know this. The elevator isn't safe. I've thought about quitting, but something keeps me here. Maybe it's the hope that I'll find a way to end the curse, to put the spirit to rest. Or maybe it's the fear that if I leave, I'll never know what really happened. I used to work for DoorDash a few years back. This incident happened during my last food delivery. I was riding my scooter into another Saturday night of dodging puddles and shady characters, all for a few extra bucks. If surviving in this world was tough, it was tougher in NYC. I stopped by the restaurant, which was an old Chinese takeout place I never came across before. A short, bald man came out from the kitchen holding a parcel. The place reeked of rotten meat, and I seriously questioned their hygiene and food quality. Handing me over the parcel, the man said it was to be delivered to an address named the Myers House. The old man looked at me with a blank stare and said,
"Deliver it promptly before midnight. Do not knock. Leave it on the doorstep."
So should I make a call or something to let the customer know that I've...
"You wouldn't want to disturb Mrs. Myers. Trust me, it's for your own good."
The man returned to the kitchen, and I couldn't help but think how weird everything was about this delivery. The GPS led me down an abandoned road. Soon, a dark shape materialized from the murk, a dilapidated house with its windows boarded up, staring back like lifeless eyes. Despite the thick, humid air, I felt a shiver run down my spine. I rechecked the address. It matched. A faint light illuminated the dark porch. There was no doorbell. I hesitated for a moment, then knocked on the heavy oak door. The sound cut through the thick silence, but there was no reply. I tried a few more times, growing more frustrated. Just as I was about to give up, the door creaked open. An old woman's partial face appeared in the crack. Her blue eyes glowed in the dark. In a raspy voice, she whispered,
"Didn't he tell you not to knock?"
"He did, but it's so dark out here, I didn't want to leave your food unattended."
"Seems like you're different than the others."
I handed her the package, and her bony fingers brushed in my hands while taking it. Her touch was cold and creepy. Just then, a loud thunder cracked outside and heavy rain started. I murmured to myself in a low voice, "Damn it, now I have to drive back in this weather."
"Well, you can wait here. Maybe have a glass of wine till the rain slows down."
A glass of wine wouldn't hurt, so I stepped in. The inside was a complete turnaround from the creepy exterior. A roaring fire crackled warmly in a grand stone hearth, casting a cozy glow over a luxurious living room. Eleanor introduced herself with an apology and asked me to have dinner with her. While I ate, Eleanor talked about the weather and the town. Her eyes, the only part of her face lit up by the fire, glowed with an unsettlingly bright amber. An eerie sensation started to crawl up my spine. After finishing the last bite, a strange emptiness settled in my stomach. "Thank you," I said, pushing the plate away. "That was deliciously different. I had no idea this restaurant serve was this good." Eleanor chuckled, letting out her crooked teeth, and said,
"Yeah, people often judge by the physical appearance. Anyways, it's time for dessert."
I ran my hand over my full stomach and told her I didn't have a place left for dessert. And that's when her face changed. She grinned and picked up a sharp steak knife, saying,
"The dessert is for me, dear. I'm happy the restaurant sent a white guy after such a long time. And I'm even happier that you knocked on the door."
A sudden wave of dizziness hit me. My head spun, and the warmth from the fire turned into an overwhelming heat. Panic surged up my throat. I tried to stand, but my legs felt like lead. Eleanor moved towards me with an unsettling hunger and a cruel smile. She was no longer frail.
"I'll enjoy you slowly. I promise."
This wasn't just a bad takeout. This was something far more sinister. With a jolt of adrenaline, I grabbed a heavy brass candlestick from a nearby table. As Eleanor lunged, I swung the candlestick, hitting her with a sickening crack. When she collapsed to the floor, a low, inhuman growl escaped her lips. She still tried to reach out to me. Taking advantage of the momentary reprieve, I stumbled towards the door, vision blurring. My hands fumbled for the handle, finally finding purchase. I slammed the door open and dashed into the rain, lungs screaming for air. I didn't look back. I didn't stop until the ragged outline of civilization reappeared, shimmering like a mirage in the distance. I saw a car coming, and with all my strength, I waved my arms and then fainted on the muddy road. Later, at the hospital, the doctors were baffled by my incoherent ramblings about an old woman who tried to eat me. They told me they found roofies in my stomach, and I think it came from the wine because Eleanor and I ate the same food. What's even more surprising is that the restaurant from where I picked up Eleanor's order vanished from the face of the earth. It was nowhere in the GPS. I'm certain that underground restaurants are scattered through NYC that are secretly filling these cannibals' midnight cravings.